You're going to love my next guest, Joe Buckner. He's the founder and visionary of the only boutique boxing studio in Fort Collins, Colorado, called Beautifully Savage. Joe has a passion for the community and helping others reach their goals and dreams, doing so much for his community. And the interesting thing about Joe is he went through some amazing hard times, very hard times in his life, like most of us, even serving prison time in the state of Colorado. And you know what? He doesn't blame the first responders or the police for doing their jobs. He blames himself. You're going to love Joe Buckner, a very humble and inspirational guy. Hello, everybody. Patrick here. Thank you for tuning into the show. You got many options, but you keep coming back to the CJ Evolution Podcast. That is why we continue to grow, folks. Your support, you sharing the shows with family and friends. Thank you so much. If you would rate and review the show on iTunes, we sure would appreciate it. You'll see a link on cjevolution.com. Big shout out, special thanks to all those brave men and women who are working in the criminal justice field. Thank you. It's a difficult environment. It's always difficult, but you're doing such a fabulous job. Thank you so much. Keep up the great work. So excited to be partnered with Detecticam, folks. Mobile threat detection is now available in the palm of your hands. This great company is taking such good care, playing their part, their role in taking care of our first responders and brave men and women in the uniform in the United States military. Head over to cjevolution.com and check out the link to Detecticam. The world's most amazing people, folks. It's a radio station back east. I'd love it. You're going to love it, too. They do such a fantastic job with their guests and their content. Check me out every night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at WMAP, World's Most Amazing People Radio.com. That's WMAP Radio.com. On to the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have Joe Buckner on the show. Joe, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time, Joe, and it's interesting for the listener. You're right up the road in Fort Collins. I'm in Louisville. We were talking about we got to make time to meet in person. But, yeah, thank you for being here, man. Now, for those people out there who don't know who you are, who is Joe Buckner?
Joe Buckner is a father. Joe Buckner is a son. He's a friend. He's an entrepreneur. He is... he'd like to think that he's a difference maker and just an energizer of people. You know, I like to tell people all the time, if you spend 20 minutes with me, you'll feel like you want to run through a wall when we're done. So that's me. I'm a simple guy, you know, just trying to do my part.
Now, what got you? But we're going to get into what you're doing out there. You're doing so many amazing things, Joe. Now, what was the catalyst behind your journey? What got you started on your path?
I've been a screw up the majority of my life. And I just gotten to a point where I was starting to get my feet under me and I was making the kind of money that people dream about making. And I just still felt empty. Mm-hmm. I felt like I had more value to give than just going around collecting commission checks. I was in business to business sales. To give some context, my greatest hero ever, even though I was a four sport athlete in high school, played college football, my greatest hero is Malcolm X. Mm-hmm. Followed very closely by Martin Luther King Jr. People that were willing to speak up and fight for maybe people who didn't have a voice, people who were willing to put it all on the line for other people were my heroes. And I just felt like I had more value to give than what I was giving. But the fact that I was in B2B sales, handling major accounts, working with C-level executives, I couldn't share my story because it was going to affect my earnings. Mm-hmm. And as a man with a family, I had to put that first. And I finally got to a point where I just felt like I wasn't being authentic and I was kind of living a fraudulent life. And I wanted to step into my truth and share it and take whatever good and bad came with that. But mostly... again, not to edify myself, but to give hope to other people that if they've been down, if life's been kicking their butt, that maybe they can get back up and fight again too.
Mm-hmm. And you started making some bad decisions in your life.
I come from a very poor family, mm-hmm. A family that's been fractured for a long time. Mm-hmm. I come from a tough family, though, mm-hmm. a family of fighters. My family's known in our town, especially when they were younger, the adults, like, that's a tough group. Like, don't mess with those people, mm-hmm. you know? My grandfather was a hard, tough man. So, you know, I come from a family, I don't know if I would say it's a great family, mm-hmm. but it's a family.
Mm-hmm.
So,
now, what got you? Again, you got in trouble with the law, correct?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Now, what did that look like?
You know, I started getting in trouble with the law when I was 14 years old. Some friends and I borrowed a scooter indefinitely from some people who a friend was watching their house. And that was my first time being on probation. And then, as a lot of people in the system find out, once you get in it, you're kind of in it. So I was on some sort of court supervised supervision from the time I was, almost 14. So 13 years old until I was 32 years old. I was, 19 years of my life. And it started out with small stuff. And, you know, the majority of that time, if I can be honest, I'm not going to paint myself as like some Al Capone, Scarface type criminal. Mm-hmm. A lot of that was technicalities. Mm-hmm. You know, like not having money to pay fines or not having money to afford classes. And so I would get revoked a lot, like probation would get revoked because I wasn't able to fulfill certain obligations like a lot of other people in the system. You know, a technicality can get you tossed in jail quick.
Sure.
Just as quick as committing a new crime.
Yeah.
So for basically 19 years of my life, I was on supervision, everything from stealing, using, you know, other people's phone cards back in the day when you needed a phone card to call long distance. I wrote a bad check one time that wasn't mine so I could buy a jacket, and ultimately culminating in, you know, the trouble I got in 2005 when I got sent away for selling drugs.
Now, what was the, because, you know, Joe, a lot of people stay in that part of their life, the rut, or whatever you want to call it, funk, and it's just a revolving door, man. You know, they commit a new crime, they go in, they get out, they commit a new crime. How did you say, all right, I'm tired of this crap, I am going to change my life? Were there influences that you were surrounding yourself with? What was the catalyst behind the big change? Because that takes a lot of work.
100%. So I was a four-sport athlete in high school, played 3 years of college football. I was one of those guys, you know, on the cover of the newspaper. You know, I just knew, like, that I had some skills. Mm-hmm. And when I went away, there was a couple of things that changed for me. One was, and I share all that, again, not to like toot my own horn, but just to say, like, that wasn't the path I was on, was I'm going to go to prison.
Mm-hmm.
One was a letter that my daughter wrote to me. She was at that time, so we're talking 2005, 14 years ago, she was 9 years old. And she wrote me a letter, and she just said, she would write these really cute letters, you know, tell me what her week was like, and, you know, someone at school is not being nice to her, whatever. And at the end of one of her letters, she said, Dad, I don't know what you did to get sent away. Was it my fault?
Oh, jeez.
Was it Mom's fault? I wish I could turn back time and take back what you did. Love, Daddy's little girl.
Wow.
And it broke my heart to think, like, man, you're such a piece of crap that you've got your 9-year-old kid out there thinking that you're in prison maybe for something she did or said or whatever. So that was the first thing where I thought, okay, I need to switch this thing up. The second one is, obviously, you know, I don't know about the rest of those guys, but the minute they told me I was going to prison for 5 years, I had the internal dialogue of like, okay, something's wrong. Like, this isn't 60 days in jail. This is, and even that's stupid. Like, this is for real. And so, you know, I knew that something was flawed in me, like in all of us, but I just didn't know how to fix it.
Mm.
And so when I was gone, an old timer pulled me aside, and, you know, you're in law enforcement, you know, an old timer, someone who's either been in prison a long time or been in and out of prison so many times that it seems like they've been in there a long time. And he pulls me aside and he says, I want to talk with you. I said, great. He says, you're different. I said, no, I'm not. Just like everybody else, I'm here. He said, no, listen to me. Like, you read, you exercise. Like, that's all you do. I don't see you hanging out, playing cards. He says, you're different. And I was kind of feeling low on myself at the time. So I was like, no, I'm not, man. I'm just like everybody else here. He says, let me ask you something. What are you wearing? I said, I'm wearing a green jumpsuit. You know, it was Department of Corrections, green DOC jumpsuit. He said, yeah, just like everybody else. He said, what's on your chest? I said, 128319. He said, you don't even have a name anymore. He said, they've taken your identity. You look just like everybody else. They've taken your name. The only thing that you have left that no one can ever take from you is your ability to choose. So this goes two ways. You can go get around other guys in here that did what you did. You'll think you're better at it when you get back out, and I'll see you back here in a couple of years. Or you can choose every single day to be the kind of person that never comes back to prison. And he gave me all the little tidbits that don't write your name on anything. You're guaranteed you're going to come back. Don't get a tattoo of your time. You're guaranteed to come back. He's like, these might be superstitious, but just believe me, you're not coming back here. And from that day forward, I said, you know what? I'm not. And so I changed my perspective. You know, you hear guys asking all the time. They're begging. They're on the phone like, get me a new lawyer. Get me out of prison. Get me out of here. And it's like, well, you probably deserve to be here. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. And I knew I deserved to be there. So what I changed my request to, whether you want to call it God, the universe, quantum physics, the secret, the law of attraction, I don't care what you call it. What I was asking for was, when I'm equipped, when I'm the kind of man that will never make decisions that get him locked up again, that's when I want to get out of here. Not a minute sooner, because my kids deserve better. My mom deserves better than having two sons in prison at the same time for selling drugs. My friends deserve better. My kid's mom deserves to not be raising children on her own because of my choices. Everyone in my life deserves more from me, and I deserve better. And so from that day forward, I just chose every single day to not take the easy way out and to fight for my life.
Wow. And what a... The guy, I mean, do you know if he's still in prison? The guy who gave you that amazing, I mean, that's probably the wisest advice I've ever heard.
You know, it's funny about those old timers. They're always really, really wise. My uncle's one of them. I have an uncle that's been locked up in prison from he's 18. Every time he gets out for a couple months, and then he gets sent right back. So I bet you he's been in prison probably 40 plus years of his life. But when he gets out, he'll drop these pearls on me that, like, you know, I remember I was probably 17 and he was visiting us. He was out for a couple months before he got sent back in. And I was complaining about what my mom had made for dinner. And he's like, are you hungry? I was like, yeah, but I'm not eating that. He says, hey, anything is closed to a naked man. And he just turns and walks away. And I was like,
Jeez.
He's right.
Yeah.
So to this day, I use that. I say when people are complaining about, oh, I don't want that, I'm like, hey, anything's closed to a naked man. So, it was some sage advice, but it literally changed the trajectory of my life forever because I get to choose every single day, no matter what, you know, doesn't matter. I always get to choose. We all get to choose. It's just being powerful enough to understand that.
And why is it so hard, Joe? You talk to many people, you train many people, get into that. Why is it so hard for people to realize that they have the power? Nobody else is going to change your life but you. You have to start. Everybody, I think, or a lot of people out there, think that, you know, they're going to wake up and somehow their life is going to be different without putting in the work.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why is it so? Why do people think that?
It's kind of like the saying, why do people write down their goals?
Yeah.
Well, the same reason they don't. Because then you're accountable to it, right? So if I understand that I have the choice and I have the power, well, then I also have to look in the mirror and go, so the fact that I'm broke, that I'm out of shape, that I don't have a good life, that's all my fault too, right? Mm-hmm. That's all on me too. Like, people don't want to have that part of the conversation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like Jocko's book, Extreme Ownership. People don't want to own their life. They want to drift along and hope that someone's going to give it to them or something's going to be placed in front of them. I just told someone the other day, opportunities don't knock. They just stand around waiting for you to recognize them or someone else takes them.
Yeah, and hope is not a strategy.
Exactly.
And the one thing that I really stuck at, and it all was just a profound story, what you just said about the advice you got in prison. But the one thing that really stuck out to me, Joe, is when you talked about money. You know as well as I do, a lot of people think that money is going to buy their happiness or money is evil. Money is nothing. It's a tool. And the one thing that, again, stuck out with me is you were making pretty good money before you went away and started getting in trouble in sales.
Oh, yeah.
And I really like what you said about money, that it wasn't filling that what you were yearning, it wasn't filling that void, what you were feeling inside.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that, and I understand this, I grew up from a family that's very poor, always 30 cents away from a quarter, always too much month at the end of the money. Like, that's just what it was, mm-hmm. you know? I'm 44 years old, so I remember when the generic stuff in the store was white with black words on it, and mm-hmm. you'd, like, had to be hella embarrassed taking out your book of food stamps to buy it. So we're sold this bill of goods, I think, that money, cars, houses, like, that's what creates happiness, without realizing, like, look at a baby. Look at a little kid. They're just happy. Mm-hmm. They don't know if they're rich. They don't know if they're poor. They're just happy. Sit them on the floor with a cardboard box and you'll lose them for 2 hours. Right? Mm-hmm. But then we get older and we start playing the comparison game. And like, well, you know, I have a Hyundai Santa Fe and it's only a year old, but that guy has a Range Rover. So his life must be better than mine. And I found out the hard way that chasing after that, because that's what I was chasing. I was chasing the American dream. I didn't want to commit crimes. I didn't want to sell drugs. I didn't want to take my dog for a walk and see drug task force people sitting down the block from my house watching me. None of that was cool and felt good. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand any other way to get this ever elusive, quote unquote, dream of money and houses and cars that a lot of us think is going to make us happy. The funny part is, as I became an adult and I sold copiers, I made way more money selling copiers than I ever made selling drugs, and I still wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm. And the one thing you mentioned, Joe, which I really believe in, is law of attraction. What we put out there, you mentioned The Secret too. That's the whole premise behind The Secret. What we mm-hmm. put out there is what we're going to get back. If you think your life is crap or shitty, that's what the universe is going to give you. If you think that you are something and you're a winner and you can go out there, not living in a bubble where you think everything's rainbows and lollipops and there's no bad days. Yes, there are going to be bad days. But if you put it out to the universe that you can accomplish anything, the universe is going to help you, right? It's going to help you along.
Yeah. I mean, you're 100% right. And I love what you said. Like, what you put out is what you get back. Like, I tell people all that time, like, what you get is what you give. And, you know, what one part of the story a lot of people don't know is, yes, I got out of prison. I repaired my life. But then just a few years ago, I was homeless. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a situation that happened with a relationship and I ended up homeless, sleeping in my car until the car got repossessed. You know, I was trying to scramble up enough money to stay at a Motel 6 or, you know, sometimes deciding whether I was going to put gas in the car or whether I was going to eat. Or get the hotel room. But the thing that kept me going was that I was like, I'm not going to let this defeat me. Mm-hmm. This is just where I'm at today. And if I'm the problem, I got myself here. Well, then I'm also the solution. Mm-hmm. Right. And so what you said about what you get, what you're putting out is what you're getting back. I used to remember every day, the first thing I'd say to myself is just stay positive. So even when people would say, hey, where are you staying tonight? And if I was lucky enough to have $46 for the Motel 6, I would tell them, hey, I'm staying at the mansion. And they would say, the mansion? And I'm like, yeah. They'd say, well, I thought you were at the Motel 6. Well, yeah, I am. But there's 48 rooms. There's a swimming pool.
Well, it's such a great way to look at things, to look at life. I mean, you're very humbling, Joe. You're a very humble person, which is really good.
Oh man, there's probably some people that would argue with that.
Well, I mean, like I said, I mean that's a humbling statement to make, and I can tell you're humble. Now, what do you think? What's your definition of a good human being, a good person, somebody who's, you know, that they're best?
I'm gonna say this, and it's super simplistic, and I love that you asked that. So I own a boxing fitness studio, and in the membership contract, the number one rule, like it's in bold print, says be a good human, mm-hmm. right? And for me, a good person is simply someone who doesn't intentionally harm anyone or anything else. I know that sounds so simplistic, but that's what it is to me. Like, we might sometimes say things that hurt someone's feelings. We didn't mean to do that. It just maybe our delivery was wrong or they received it one way. You know, you might roll through a stop sign. You weren't thinking. Maybe you just like you're fixing the music. I don't know. But people that intentionally go out and hurt people and things and do damage, like they mean to do it, those are the only people that I have a problem with, where I feel like, okay, I don't know if that person is fully redeemable. Mm-hmm. You know, I just don't know. I feel like everyone deserves a second chance, but like people that hurt babies and women and like just intentionally harm. Like, so it's like Google's mantra, right? Do no harm. I live by that. Like, I don't want to intentionally hurt anybody. So for me, a good person is just someone who's moving through the world that way. Do no harm and have some empathy for everyone, because we're all going through something.
Yeah. And that's a good point, because yeah, my wife tells me that all the time. She reminds me, you know, if somebody cuts me off or something, I'm like, what the hell is this person doing? And, you know, she always reminds me, don't, you know, Patrick, you need to realize that everybody's going through their own problems. Everybody has their own baggage in life. And we don't know what it is, obviously, but everybody's carrying something, right?
Yeah, and that dude that cut you off, he might have just got fired from his job, or he might have just heard that he was getting divorced, or his kid might be sick and he's rushing to the hospital. Like, we don't know, you know?
Yeah.
He might also just be a crappy driver.
Seems like we get a lot of those.
I mean, let's be real. Sometimes that's just the case. I tell people all the time, like, it's cool to be positive, but if someone's a jerk, it's okay to tell them they're being a jerk.
Now, how did you get, let's talk about your studio, man. Yeah. Your beautifully savage boxing studio. I know you've always been a fighter, like you said. You know, you wanted to fight, help people fight for their dream, especially through boxing. So you always had a passion for boxing, or what?
Yeah. Boxing is my favorite. And I believe that, you know, I was first introduced at the age of 6. As I get further into this and I do have more opportunities to speak, I realized I love boxing so much because I love my Uncle Tony so much. I mean, growing up, that guy was my hero. He was everything to me, you know? He was like the first family member I ever knew that had a house and not an apartment or a trailer, you know? Mm-hmm. He had a job. But he was also, you know, a 2-time Marine Golden Glove boxing champion, #2 ranked flyweight in the world. Like, so as I go through this journey more and more, I realize that the thing I love most about boxing is the connection that it gives me to my Uncle Tony, who's really, I mean, one of my greatest inspirations and heroes. Just a solid man, loves his family, and has always sacrificed for them, even sometimes to the detriment of himself. And that's just not something you see a lot anymore.
Mm-hmm. Now, boxing is, I mean, you always hear about, and forgive me, I'm ignorant when it comes to this. And obviously, I know what it is, but is it that big as it used to be? I remember growing up in the 80s, boxing was huge. But is it still as big as it used to be?
No, not at all. Like, you know, when I'm 44 years old. Mm-hmm. There used to be a time where the heavyweight champion of the world was a king.
I remember when Tyson won it. Exactly. You know, he was on top.
You know, 20 years old, baddest man on the planet. Like, the heavyweight champion of the world was a king.
Yeah.
Boxing, it's just not that anymore. Now, there's guys making money, Canelo Alvarez, Floyd Mayweather, like mm-hmm. Anthony Joshua. There's people making money. Boxing's just not, it's not a mainstream thing, and it's very brutal. To me, nothing's more brutal than boxing. Mm-hmm. Even MMA is not, because if you're in an MMA fight and you knock the person on the ground, jump on them, hit them 2 times, the referee will jump on top of them and cover them and stop the fight. In boxing, as long as you can continue to stand up and take punishment, they'll let you keep fighting. Mm-hmm. It's brutal. And I just don't think that that's something that appeals to a lot of people. The other thing is, like, fighters come from impoverished areas. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of people, it's hard to connect with that and really cheer for that, because you're basically, like, it's brutal to mm-hmm. ball up your fist and punch someone in the head repeatedly, mm-hmm. right? And you intend to, and they intend to punch you. Like, it's planned. Yeah. So boxing is not as big a sport as it used to be, but it's still, there's still guys making, you know, $100 million boxing. It's just not as mainstream popular as other sports.
But I think there's a lot of parallels, you correct me if I'm wrong, Joe, to life and boxing.
Yep. Oh yeah.
You get your ass knocked down, you can either stay down, get knocked out, or you can get up and keep fighting, right?
You hit the nail on the head. That's actually why it had to be a boxing fitness studio for me, so that I could make those parallels for people, that even the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali, got knocked flat on his butt mm-hmm. by more than one fighter, and yet he still got up. That's what champions do. They get back up and they keep fighting.
Yeah.
Heck. They even show up to fight knowing they're not going to win. When Ali was older, he knew he wasn't going to win. But you know what? Maybe physically he didn't think he was going to win, but in his heart, he was still Muhammad Ali, right? He believed in himself so much that he would still show up and fight. And he got battered in his older age. I mean, he got embarrassed. But he still showed up to fight because that's what fighters do. That's what life is about. It's about showing up. You're not always going to win, mm-hmm. but you still have to show up.
Well, that's right. He's the greatest of all time because he had a way of getting in somebody's head, too, and talking smack to him. Right?
Well, exactly. Think about that. Like, so he was the first heavyweight fighter ever to win the heavyweight title three different times, right? Mm-hmm. Besides that, Muhammad Ali doesn't hold a single record in boxing. Doesn't have the most knockouts, doesn't have the most wins. He had five losses. The end of his career, all he did was get beat up and lose. And yet people still say he's the greatest of all time. But yeah. It's because not only did he stand up and fight, he fought outside the ring. He gave up the three best years of his life for what he believed in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He gave up his title for what he believed in. Those are the parallels that I like to make for people. Like, everyone has a battle to fight. Everyone has something that's going to come. Life is going to try you. It's going to hit you hard and knock you on your butt. How are you going to respond?
And I imagine you see just transformations in your gym, Joe. You see people coming in there, maybe timid, afraid, and they come out being a badass.
I'm getting I'm tearing up at you saying that, because we have a group of people now who are graduating from college, and they've been with us for almost 3 years now. And every one of them has sent a message like, this place changed my life.
Wow.
And I remember them walking in. The one lady was so quiet, so timid. She wouldn't even speak. And now she's like this strong, powerful woman. And even her friends and family will say, the physical changes are cool, but she's changed as a person, you know? I'll get messages from people's parents saying, like, you know, he wouldn't even leave the house. He wanted to commit suicide. Like, you guys have changed his life.
Wow.
I'm getting super emotional right now because I don't care about fitness. And I know that sounds flippant and people are going to hear it and go, oh, he doesn't care about fitness. You can get a good workout at the park by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go buy some Insanity DVDs and Sean T will have you jumping around your living room and you'll get in great shape if you do it every day for 60 days. Getting in shape is just a byproduct of showing up and being consistent. I want to speak to people's hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the place came about. People were trying to push me to become a motivational speaker. And in my mind, I was like, I don't want to do that. That's not me. And I'll do it now. I do it more. But like, that's not where I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, if I can lock you in a room for an hour, put on really cool music so that I create this really cool moment and this vibe, I can say the same things into a microphone that I would say if I was on a stage
mm-hmm.
and have the same impact. But now I get to be with you 3, 4, 5 times a week. You get to ask me questions. We get to be in close proximity. I told you earlier, if you spend 20 minutes with me, you will literally be like, I'm going to run through a wall. And so that's what I want to do for people. And so to have someone say, I've been putting off law school for 5 years and I just applied and I got in. Thank you. To have someone say, I just got into Colorado School of Mines. It's the only school I wanted to get into and I was afraid to apply. But because of this place, I went for it and I got in. Like, that's the reason this place exists. You know, we have women who've been sexual assault victims. We have people whose family members have died. People who've gone through all sorts of things. And I'll let them know, like, this is your safe space to come in here and punch it out.
Did you ever think, and maybe this is an odd question, Joe, but that God puts you where you're at for a reason?
Yes, sir.
Because I believe in that. I believe people, that they're there for, you're in your position in life for a reason.
Yes, sir.
And all that stuff that you had to go through, the horrible stuff and in prison and all that stuff, God said, all right, we're going to put you, we're going to test you, we're going to make you go through this to be the great human being that you are right now.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I believe that. You know, when I was a young man, one of my greatest mentors, heroes, is a gentleman named Early Thomas. You know, for me, when I was young, I looked up to this man so much. And he would say to his son, who's one of my best friends, he'd say, Joe Buckner's going to be a preacher someday. He said, I have dreams that he's standing on stage preaching to people. And my friends would tell me, and I was like, I'm not doing that. My granddaddy's a preacher. I'm not going to do that. But it's less about that, and it's more about being able to speak into the hearts of people. So even when I was locked up, I was born and raised in the Baptist church. So I believe in all different types of things. But I used to read the Bible, and Joseph went through that. Joseph had to go through that. Joseph got put into prison. He was lied on. And he had to go through all that to become the great man that he was. And had I not gone through the things that I'd gone through, I wouldn't be able to use the gifts that I've been given to empower a group of people that I feel like are forgotten. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like people fight for everyone's rights except for ex-offenders. Mm-hmm. It's almost like once you're a felon, society's like, we're done. We're done with you. And that's hard for me. Like, you can't get a job that's worth having. You can't rent an apartment. I mean, I was a drug offender. My charge had nothing to do with driving a car. My license was still taken away for 2 years. Like, it's almost as if it's like, we just want to take all of you and send you to an island and forget that you existed.
Yeah.
So I want to be, I want to use my gifts. So when people meet me and they say, I never would have guessed that about you. And I'll say, great. So the next time you meet someone that has a colorful past, that's maybe made some wrong choices, you'll give them a shot. Because you might have the next Joe Buckner standing in front of you.
Well, Joe, brother, you are doing, and really quick, and I want to mention, because you're, again, man, you're such an amazing person. You were featured as a speaker at the TEDx Arena Circle in September 2016, right?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, that was cool.
Now, how did that go? Was it fun?
Yeah, it was rad. I mean, it's it was a cool opportunity. That the guy never uploaded them, so people didn't get to see them, and I think it's probably one of those things where you remember it better than it actually was, so I'm probably glad that he didn't, but... It was cool to be able to share my story in front of that many people and to get a standing ovation and to just, it was in the beginning of when I'd opened Beautifully Savage. So for me, it was just validation that I'm going in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, and Joe, I mean, you have every reason to be pissed off at life, to be mad at society, God, whatever. And and what I love about you is that you're not, you're so humble, and you did a lot of introspective thought and reflection, and you're like, I'm the only one that has to change. The only one that can change. And that's what's so amazing about you is, yes, I mean, whatever you want to do, folks, you can do it.
You know, as you're, with your career in law enforcement, I bet you heard so many times, like, this county's out to get me, you cops, or blah, blah, blah. And it's like, actually, I was the one committing crimes. Mm-hmm. So had I not been committing crimes, there would have never been a reason for any cops to come after me. So I actually was never angry. I was never upset at anyone but myself.
But you have every reason to be, is what I'm saying. Because a lot of people are not like you, Joe. You're not the norm, brother. You are the exception, which is in a good way. I mean, a lot of people out there. You're right. I spent 23 years in law enforcement. I can count on one hand how many times people said, "You know, it was my fault."
I'll share something interesting with you. And as a law enforcement officer, you'll appreciate this. So, like I said, I spent the better portion of more than 10 years getting in trouble, right? I have never, except the one occasion where I was not guilty, I've never even gone into a courtroom with an attorney. Whenever I would get in trouble, I would literally show up, sit down with the DA and go, hey, I'm not going to waste anyone's time. I did this, so what do I have to do to take care of it? Now, in hindsight, that was probably really stupid.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That was probably really, really stupid, and I should have at least got an attorney to have that.
You got a public defender out there, Joe.
Somebody. But that's just me. Like,
yeah.
like the name of my place is Beautifully Savage. I believe we're all beautiful, but we all have darkness. And I've always been able to lean into both of those. So when my darkness would win, I'm not going to make excuses for it. Even when I sold drugs, I would tell my then, you know, the mother of my children, I'd say, one day I'm going to walk out of that front door and I'm not coming back. And when that happens, that means they got me. You'll get a call from me to bail me out, and then we'll start fighting this thing. But you have to understand that's where we're going.
Jeez.
I didn't have rose-colored glasses on. Like, I choose, right? Even then, thinking about it, I was choosing. And when you choose, if you want to eat pizza every day, you're choosing a certain lifestyle.
Sure.
If you want to get up and work out and drink water and sleep and read, you're choosing a certain lifestyle and whatever comes with that. So me, I've always been that person. I made the choice. I'll take whatever comes from that, good or bad. Doesn't matter.
And that's why you are at where you're at, brother. You know that. And that's why you're changing so many lives that you're an inspiration. You are, man, and a motivational, you know, speaker, and you are just rocking it. Joe, if people want to reach out with you, brother, and find you and come see you, how can they do that?
On Instagram, it's at Mr. Joe Buckner. My website is mrjoebuckner.com. That's the best place to contact me to come and speak, or, you know, just if you want to bounce some ideas off of me. And, yeah, those are the two best places to find me. And I'm just in a really cool space right now where I'm just trying to help as many, I'm just trying to impact as many lives as possible. That's my life's mission. That's why I was put on this earth, to walk in the footsteps of the giants, the heroes that I had before, the Malcolm X's and the Martin Luther King's. Not saying I'm like those people, but I would like to be a voice of change in this world.
You are, brother. Keep up the fantastic work, my friend. Thank you for coming on the show. You're such an inspiration. Keep up the great work, brother. If there's anything we can ever do for you, please don't hesitate to ask.